Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36, newly married, and all I keep hearing is, not pregnant yet? Or, more of a career woman, are you? Or, you haven't got forever, you know? Yeah, I do know, thanks. But what I don't know is, if I actually want a baby. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network, where I speak to new mums, non-mums, baby wanters, baby rejectors, to figure out whether to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I speak to Sitel, who we met on the last episode, and find out how her third round of IVF went.
You want desperately to hear some good news because it has been just so invasive and so intense, and other people have had success, so why not you?
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla. Why, hello. Now, if you haven't listened to the last episode of To Baby or Not To Baby, please stop right there. Thank you very much.
Rewind.
And go and listen to the other one. But quick recap. So last week we spoke to Sitel, who was on her third round of IVF and was in the 2-week wait, which is the very last stage where the stuff has been implanted and then you find out if you are pregnant or not pregnant.
Yeah, can we just say how brave Sitel is? Because I think to be interviewed about IVF and failed IVF and all the other things that we spoke about anyway with her is really brave. But to actually do that and allow us in on that journey with the 2-week wait,
yeah,
I think hats off. Well, and we both said last time how much we love Sitel.
She just speaks so practically and pragmatically about something that is so emotional, and I really admire that.
Yeah, so do I. And it's quite difficult to do that. She still manages to keep that emotion so that you're really with her.
So, Sitel, I hate having to even ask you this question, but please can you fill us in on what happened after I last spoke to you?
So I wish I was sitting here and I could share some great news. Unfortunately, the last cycle failed and we were crushed, really. I mean, you go through it and you try not to have high expectations, actually, and not expect anything. But because it's such an intense process and you put everything on hold, you can't help but be a little bit optimistic, which is only natural. And it was really disappointing when I got the call. And unfortunately, I was by myself in a cafe around the corner from the clinic, because Neil had a work emergency and he couldn't get anyone else to deal with it. So he couldn't come with me. And they called and told me the bad news. It lasted about a couple of minutes. And then I just went back to scheduling my tweets, having my coffee.
No.
Yeah. For about half an hour or so, I think I was probably in shock. And then I went to the loo, closed the door, rested my forehead against the wall and just bawled my eyes out. And it just felt so unfair. I was just so devastated. And I thought, after everything, you know, we went to one of the best clinics in the UK. I did everything right. I had a much more positive approach to everything this time. I wasn't working, so I could fully focus on it. And even then, in spite of all that, I still couldn't get the result that I really wanted, that we wanted. Thankfully, I had a nice lunch date planned. So I was meeting one of Neil's cousins, who I get on really well with, and she was over from Kenya. And we went to the River Cafe, which was gave me something to look forward to. And yeah, as soon as I saw her, I just burst into tears again. And I'd kind of warned her as well. I could be in a great mood and we'll be celebrating, or, you know, I could be pretty down, so be prepared for that. And she was great, to her credit, you know, gave me a big hug and we just talked through it. Cried a little bit more together, and then I just said, well, give me some steak tartare, I'll have my first glass of wine in a couple of months, let's look on the positive side, you know. So we had a good lunch, and then I went back home, and I wish I could have just got into my battered, almost 20-year-old university hoodie and opened another bottle of wine and just really felt sorry for myself, put something trashy on the TV. We had some work going on in the garden. We were having the stairs repaired. And so there were a couple of workmen kind of traipsing in and out of the house for 2 or 3 days during the day. But it just was really awkward because I wanted to be by myself and then wait for Neil and then just have that time together. And I just couldn't do that at all. And they were lovely, actually, not demanding at all, very sensitive. But part of me was thinking, are they judging me for sitting here during the middle of the day, just reading or, you know, having cups of tea while my husband is out working, and strange thoughts like that.
Yeah.
And it was just a time when I really needed to just unwind and process the emotions that I'd gone through. And it was difficult for Neil as well to be away and not be with me at that time because he had been on previous occasions. But that was a really tough week. And then the following day, actually, the universe threw me a bone because one of my best friends lives in Leicester and she happened to be visiting her sister who lives 10 minutes down the road from me by sheer coincidence as well. And she just contacted me and said, "How are you?" And I told her the news and she said, "Hang on, I'll be there in about an hour." And and that was just really something that I needed. It picked me up a lot. And again, we had a good cry and chat and a good meal. And I felt much better for that.
Do you know what's awful is that when you, like, I can vividly remember getting the message from you to say that it hadn't worked. And it even chokes me up just talking about it now. Because honestly, when I got the message, I cried instantly because I just felt so much for you. Like, doing the interview with you, I felt, you know, all of those positive kind of hopeful feelings that you were feeling. And that had kind of, it almost made me kind of really hopeful and positive, thinking, oh, yes, this is, you know, this is going to be wonderful. And that's not even me going through it. And the emotions that I felt for you were, it was just so sad that I can't even fathom what that must feel like for you when you're in it.
And it just sort of feels like the ground has been opened up underneath you and swallowing you up. You just think, oh, here we are again. And you want desperately to hear some good news because it has been just so invasive and so intense, and other people have had success, so why not you? And it makes you feel like such a massive failure as well. And I've been told I use that word a lot, but unfortunately that is how it feels, because you have all of this support and still you don't get that outcome. And others, you know, you hear all these stories of people getting pregnant by mistake, and you know, it's really hard to be kind to yourself actually at that time.
Yeah, because that's the awful thing about it, is that actually, like you say, you have done everything that you can do, so really that you shouldn't feel like a failure. But I suppose you almost can't help but not give yourself the hard time and the guilt and you know, what ifs. And
yeah, there's especially as we approach Christmas as well, because there are loads of triggers everywhere. It's a big family time and, you know, pregnancy announcements galore. But for me, for us, the worst thing is that on Christmas 2015 was the day that we found out that we were pregnant. It was our little surprise. And it was such a wonderful feeling. I remember just seeing pregnant on the stick and just, I couldn't believe it. And we thought, well, this is wonderful, and projecting a little bit into the future, trying not to, because you know, you never know what happens, and trying to be a bit pragmatic about these things. So now every time Christmas comes around, I can't help but think, well, you know, how old would that child have been now, and our lives would have been so different. But here we are, you know, years down the line, still just the two of us, really.
So what now? Like, where are you at now? Do you go again? Do you not want to go again?
Well, as soon as I got the result, I was adamant that I didn't want to, because it's just so hard and it takes so much out of you. And as a couple as well, it's very hard to handle all the emotional and physical aspects of it. But now that the dust has settled a little bit, I feel I could be ready for another cycle, whether that's with my own eggs or donor eggs. That's something that we're considering at the moment. We are taking a break, so it's been about 3-4 months now since the cycle failed, and just to let my body and mind recover. We went for a post-cycle consultation with my clinic and they advised a few more tests. So we did all these additional tests and the results came back fine for both of us, which is a relief. But then also part of you wishes that maybe there was something wrong so that they could fix it.
Yeah.
I think unexplained infertility is probably one of the hardest things. So they have an inkling of what the issues could be, but nothing is set in stone, unfortunately. We then also went to the fertility show for the first time, which was great because we got a chance to go along to some talks about various topics, and then also speak to a few clinics. So now we're considering other clinics. So I'm happy with the one that we went to for the last couple of cycles, the private clinic, but there are many out there. And I think I feel ready now to try another one and see if there's a better fit.
It's better be important because you're holding up watching Downton Abbey.
Shut up. If we had to do IVF, do you think you would be able to do my injections?
Whew. I think I'd need some serious like practice or training or...
They train you on an orange.
Yeah, like desensitization, because at the moment I can't even watch people having injections on like casualty. Like without, I have to close my eyes and look away. And
you're actually being serious.
I ate them and I go for a faint after every injection I've ever had. Like, so, I mean...
So God help us.
So I'd be up for trying to overcome my fear to do it if that's the road we wanted to go down. But I mean, the thought of it petrifies me.
Okay, so I'll be doing my own then if we...
No, I'll definitely try and help.
I can't deal with you doing it and then fainting.
Hopefully not.
Not giving me any faith in the situation.
The fact that there is even a fertility show, which I didn't know about, makes me, and I know we touched on this a bit before, but again, it makes me think, I don't feel like I experience a lot of people who are talking about fertility issues, but there obviously are so many people talking and having fertility issues that there's a whole flipping show for it.
There is, and that's not the only one, actually. Earlier this year at the Barbican, there was a fertility fest, and I believe they also have it in Manchester and in Vienna and various other places across Europe. So I think it's fantastic that people are talking about it more, all sorts of aspects of infertility. So male infertility, using donor eggs, donor sperm, double donors even. There are so many issues that can crop up. And the more we talk about it, the more awareness we'll raise and the more sensitive I think people will be towards others going through it as well. And I think it helps people who are experiencing it to process those emotions too and not feel ashamed about what they're going through.
Yeah, and honestly, not just on this podcast, but I've seen, you know, the news articles that you've written and the other places that you've kind of popped up and spoken about it. And hats off to you for doing that and continuing to do that, because the more that you do, the more somebody else might then feel like they can talk about it as well. So genuinely, I'm like bowing down to you.
Oh, thank you very much. No, I mean, it's really important to me to be able to talk about this, and I'm grateful that I'm in a position to be able to do so as well, because not everybody can and not everybody wants to, which I respect as well. It's such a personal choice. But especially for Indians, I think there is a lot of shame and cultural stigma wrapped up in this. And I've had a lot of private messages and conversations with friends, families, strangers who've said, thank you so much for just coming out, being brave, sharing your story from both aspects as well, from what Neil is going through, because Indian men don't tend to, well, men in general, don't talk about these topics at all.
Yeah, totally. How does he feel about it? How does he feel about you being so open about it?
He's really supportive, which makes all the difference. And we're both doing it for the same reasons, because we do want other people, we don't want them to feel alone, basically. When I was going through the first couple of cycles, that's how I felt. Even though I had that support network of friends and family, you feel that no one else is understanding you and you haven't quite voiced what you're going through.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult for then others to support you in the right way as well. Because there are a lot of comments and triggers and people saying, oh, you don't have kids yet. And I mean, of course, you've got a whole podcast about that. So, yeah. And I don't think that people mean that maliciously. I'd like to think that there aren't people who are deliberately poking at the bits that make you feel bad. You know, it's an innocent question for the most part. And so instead of getting angry about it, which of course I do sometimes, it's only natural, I'd like to try and educate people and just make them aware of what's going on behind the scenes.
Do you think that by you talking quite openly about it, that has probably helped Neil to do the same?
I think so too. And going to the fertility show for him was an eye-opener as well, being around people who were going through their own difficulties and all the different discussions and clinics and options available. It's great. Whereas I've been talking about this now since Mother's Day of this year, so I'm involved with the TTC community, trying to conceive on Instagram, and I have lots of conversations about it, so I feel very well supported. But he also speaks to friends and family, but I think it's a bit more difficult for men in general to open up about infertility.
Is there, because obviously, again, since doing the podcast and since talking to you, I'm much more aware of the TTC community. Is that kind of not exclusive to women, but is that a predominantly female thing? Because from what I've seen on social media, it is. But is there that network the same for men? Because I know from talking to you and from talking to Faye earlier in the series, like that community of people when you're going through this stuff is an absolute godsend.
It really is. I felt so understood from the first podcast that I listened to, and I was laughing and crying at the same time. And I felt, it's a little bit cheesy to say that, but I felt like I'd found my people. Because it's your friends and family, they will want to help you and they see you in pain and it's only natural. And I want to do the same if I see any of my friends and family hurting. But unless you've gone through it, I think it's very hard to have that true empathy. I find it much easier to talk to people either online or DMs or, you know, in person if they've also had some issues with infertility. I don't think it's exclusive to women, but yeah, like you say, it's the majority of women who are using that hashtag. But also same-sex couples, men, women, I've seen lots of different strands of conversation. And when I went to the fertility show, there were options for everybody. So I wouldn't say it's very exclusive.
No, but could probably be better for men, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to the fertility fest at the Barbican, there were a few men who were discussing Facebook groups that were very helpful to them when they were going through their struggles. But there are fewer resources. But I think it was a couple of months ago that the BBC also had a fertility week. And there were different shows about men discussing their issues as well.
Camilla, didn't you have a thing about the men kind of pulling together and supporting each other? And
yeah, it was lovely, actually. So we talked last time about how I miscarried before Chester. And a friend of mine and her husband had miscarried the year before. And when it happened, they knew that I'd miscarried, and I'd been around their house. And her partner said to me, just kind of took me aside and said, oh, by the way, if Ed wants to chat about it, then just let me know, because like I'll call him or something and we can just have a chat, because I know it's really hard for him too. And I just thought that was so nice and so refreshing, because it's a hard enough subject to broach anyway, let alone say, well, actually, you know, if you want me to talk about it and Ed to talk about it too. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I did as well, because I also think that in these things, because, you know, the focus is predominantly on the woman because she's the one doing the pregnancy bit, that actually sometimes the men can not get forgotten about, but the focus is less on them. Mm-hmm. So actually to go, oh no, tell him if he needs some love and moral support and a shoulder to cry and I'm here, it's nice.
Yeah, and I think I had to remind myself as well to actively ask Ed how like he was doing with it, because you do get consumed with what is going on in your body and the loss that you're feeling, but actually obviously it's equally as important to him, and I think in some respects even harder, because they want to take away your pain and you going through that physical thing. So yeah, I think it's so important to talk about it.
Big up the men.
Big up the men.
Women seem to be the ones who are a little bit, find it easier to maybe talk about their feelings or if they're having a tough time. And I think for men, it almost feels like they are kind of playing catch up, but they're getting, people are talking about it more. People are more open about it. And so obviously, you know, if the same can happen with the fertility stuff as well, and it can help people, then that's kind of the main thing, isn't it?
Exactly. No, you're right. And I just took part in a campaign, which will be released in January, and it's all about raising awareness of infertility and the comments and questions that can trigger people. And there were the people who took part, like myself, from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and there were also some men involved in that. So I'm looking forward to sharing more information about that on my Instagram next year. The first one has already gone live with Alice Rose.
I saw that. It's good.
I mean, it's shocking.
Yes, it is, because it's one of those where it's almost like you kind of, you laugh and then you're like, because they're done in a way that is meant to almost make you laugh, but then kind of you almost like second guess the feelings and emotions that you have when you're watching the videos. But I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, it's one of those situations when you go through it and you think, oh, it'll make a great story one day. But right now I'm fuming.
Yeah. What is yours?
Basically along the lines of, well, you've been trying for a while, so maybe you're not doing it right. Maybe you weren't paying attention in kind of sex ed class at school, and you should try certain things, like, you know, change up the positions and what you're wearing, and maybe put some music on.
No!
I don't know. It was ludicrous. And I, in front of people as well. It's never just to the side in a room, you know, let me just have a word with you quietly. How are things going sensitively? It was at a big gathering.
Who are...
Yeah, you'll have to wait and see.
Oh, crikey. What do you think would be a good question to ask or a good thing to say? Because sometimes, you know, I have had friends who have had difficulties with conceiving, or I've known that they're going through IVF. And I sometimes think I don't know what is the right question to ask, because I don't want to, you know, make them upset if they're having a tough time. Mm-hmm. But equally, I don't want to not mention it and it almost feel like the elephant in the room. So what would be a good thing to say?
I think it's different for everyone, but for me, because I've been so open about it now, which helps, I think the best thing would just be to ask how I am, and to say, look, I'm really sorry that you're going through this thing. It's terrible. I feel for you. What's going on? Do you want to talk about it? And how are you feeling? And then sort of take your lead from the response, the reaction. Yeah. Some people don't want to talk about it, and that's perfectly fine and understandable, and they'll come to you in their own time. And it also depends on the situation. If it's, for example, a family gathering, or, you know, we've gone out to see a show or something and someone just leans over to you and says it, you know, you have to pick your time and a place. And it also depends on who it is as well.
Yeah.
Because you're more receptive to certain people than others. But I think for the most part, from all the conversations that I've had and from this campaign as well that we filmed, what comes through, the main message is just to ask people how they are and to listen, to not to try to resist the urge to give advice as well, because naturally you'll want to say, well, have you tried this? And what about that? And there's always adoption. And there are lots of options. But if people are going to go down that road, there are things that they have to navigate. Feelings, for example, of not having your own biological children. That's a lot to wrestle with, because some people dream of that. And it's, you're grieving in a way. You have to put that dream to rest and then move on to another option and deal with that as best you can. So you have to just wade through it very carefully, I think.
Yeah, I think, and you kind of said it in passing there, but I think, do you want to talk about it as well? That is, it's kind of, I mean, it seems like the really obvious question, but actually it's probably one that often we don't ask. But yeah, of course, like, do you want to talk about it? Because you might really want to talk about it, but you might be like, God, please no, let's not talk about it.
That's the thing. I've been so open about it on social media, on my blog, and just when I meet people as well. But there are times when I don't want to talk about it at all, because it does bring up all the emotions that you're trying hard to process in the background. And it's something that stays with you all the time. I'm always thinking about it, because there's no way you can get away from babies. You know, they're in the street, you can hear them on TV, or, you know, it's in ads, and especially at Christmas, like, there, it's everywhere. So you have to just try and manage yourself, really, and your emotions.
How do you feel like when you, you know, you said that you went to the fertility show and you are going to hopefully try again and maybe try something different or a new clinic or whatever. How do you feel when you think about that?
I feel positive overall. I think there are phases where sometimes I just get down and think, why me? Why us? Why do we have to go through this? Why can't it be easy? As it seems to be for other people. Of course, you never know what's going on behind closed doors. But it's just the cards that we've been dealt, and we're very lucky to have these options as well, because I realise not everybody can afford it. It's IVF isn't cheap and it's very draining, and with work as well. I don't know if some people are open about it, if they can take that time off. Some people work through as well and find that that's helpful. I personally find it to be a bit of a hindrance, because I like to just focus on the task at hand and going to all the appointments and trying to navigate that without the distraction of meetings and emails and etc. and commuting. But we've been to a couple of open evenings now, and we will be making a decision soon as to whether we stay with the current clinic or move on to another one. I think I feel very well supported and surrounded by people, and it's good to have opened up the conversation. Yeah, I think I feel positive overall.
Good. I'm glad. You know, when you're considering, do we try again, how much does the financial thing impact your decision?
quite a bit, because you do get the quotes and it's hard for them to give you a final figure. It depends on whether you do IVF or ICSI. Now, ICSI is a bit more intensive because they are introducing the sperm into the egg, as opposed to just putting the sperm and the egg in the dish and letting them meet and do their thing. And after that, you've got to think of all the drugs as well, and they can't predict which ones you'll need. So they can give you ballpark figures for everything, and it is hard to budget, and it is extremely expensive. And there are other options, and I know that you can get loans and things. There are financial plans, but it does weigh into the decision quite a bit.
Yeah, of course, because even if you get a loan, then at some point, at the end of the day, you're still paying, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well...
I know.
I honestly could not be rooting for you more. I so...
thank you.
Like, saying a little prayer now. And so, yeah, my fingers, toes are absolutely crossed for you.
Thank you. That's the thing, being so open about it as well. I felt last time that everybody was supporting me and rooting for me and for both of us, really. So that helped, I think, to go forward. And when we got the result as well, I just thought... I wasn't looking forward to sharing it with everybody, but there was so much empathy out there and people did feel for us, and that was fantastic.
Do you know what? I still now feel so gutted for CETAL, but at the same time, I still feel really optimistic and hopeful, and I feel like her approach to it is so positive that it makes me think if and when it does work, I just feel like she'll be a good mum.
Absolutely. Like, I was so gutted, and I feel like everyone listening will be gutted, but I think it's really important that people do hear this, because it's not always this success story, and it's can be a really long journey. But yeah, you're right, she's equipped to carry on and maybe make some changes to see what will happen. But I do feel like she will be a mum in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And she will be a brilliant one.
I honestly feel like it's going to happen, but I don't know if that's just because I'm so hopeful for her that like I'm then projecting this thing, but I'd really hope that it will happen for her anyway.
Me too.
By the way, you know I sent her a gift, don't you? When I found out that it hadn't worked, when she sent me the message to say it hasn't worked. And by the way, the week leading up to her getting that message from her, every morning when I woke up, I would think, is it today? Because she didn't tell me the day that she was finding out. I kept thinking, is it today? And then when I hadn't heard from her, I was thinking, oh, okay, maybe it's not today. And then a week or so had gone by and I kept thinking, I think that she would know by now. And anyway, when I got the message that it hadn't worked, I was like, right, I want to do something. I want to do something nice for her. So I sent her a case of wine, because I was like, she's not been able to drink for ages because she's been in the run-up to the IVF thing. And so I thought I'll send her something that like she couldn't have had while she was doing her IVF as like a treat. And she loved it so much that she wrote a blog post for the Huffington Post about the fact that effectively a stranger sent her a case of wine.
Oh, I love that though. Do you know what? That just goes to show as well, because actually you didn't know CETAL at all, did you, before that first interview?
No, we've got a mutual friend and that's how I got introduced to her. But yeah, never spoken to her or met her before.
So it just goes to show how you so got each other.
Yeah.
And she talks about in that, like, you know, you say about... what do you want people to say to you when it has happened? And you say about that open question, that do you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Yes. Always ask that question. Like, don't... I think people feel so nervous about it, they almost shut it down. So they'll go, oh, how are you feeling? And then they go, oh, well, that was a stupid question. I know how you're feeling.
Yeah.
But actually you don't. And yeah, it's nice to talk. And the humorous side of sending the wine, I think, is great, because clearly you two both like a glass of wine. So
yeah, that's what made it even more annoying, that the builders wouldn't leave her alone so she could have drank some of the case of wine.
Oh, I could always picture her in her hoodie with her wine.
Yeah,
like, get out and let me read my book.
Yeah. But yeah, so I know we talk about, oh yeah, you know, what do you do? And obviously that would not necessarily be a good thing to do for everyone if it doesn't pan out, but it was a gesture of me just saying, I am sorry that you're having a shit time at the minute, and I hope that this might make you smile, if nothing else.
And it obviously did.
And it did.
It was very nice.
It did. Do you know what Seatel does, to be fair? She shares loads. She's written a lot of articles. She's done loads of good stuff for the trying to conceive community and talked about her fertility issues. So if you want to find out more from her, find her on Instagram, and all of the links to every good bit of stuff she's done is on there. But she is at Savila Fair, which is spelt S-A-V-L-A-F-A-I-R-E, Savila Fair.
Oh, I'm glad you did spell that, because I definitely would have put that in.
Well, in my head, it makes her sound like French, like Savila Fair.
It's a good way of remembering
her. Her surname is Savila.
Okay.
She talks about food, so I think that's why it's Savila Fair.
I feel like I just want to follow her anyway. Like, you know, I'm not in the trying to conceive community, but I just want to hear what she's got to say.
Yeah, she's got some good stuff to say, so get following.
So let's hear what you've got to say about your percentage this week. Where are you?
Weirdly, I'm higher again, because even though it didn't work, again, I feel like her optimism and positivity has boosted me, that even if I go through the rough stuff on the way and I have to go through IVF and I have to go through it not working, then that might be okay. So I'm 80-20.
Nice. Feeling empowered.
Yeah.
No? I took that as what you meant. She was empowering.
No, more reassured.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media, @2babyornot. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it really help us out, but it will guarantee that the builders will never be in if you want to do some daytime wine drinking. Cheers to that. Join me next time when I try to decide whether to baby or not to baby.
On the next To Baby or Not To Baby.
They were saying this is incredibly rare. You're unlikely to be able to conceive. You're unlikely to have children. Even if you do conceive, the children may be malformed.